This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Saturday Magazine, sponsored by Velocity Rewards,
the award-winning loyalty program for Virgin Australia's frequent flyers.
Right now is one of the most important times in the 26-year history of Joy. Times are tough financially, but that will never stop us delivering powerful, meaningful and uplifting radio for you. To get ready for the future, we're launching Joy Nation, and we need your support to do it. So help Joy by asking your workmates, your next door neighbour, your mum, your dad, your siblings and of course your friends. Go to joy.org.au and make a donation to build Joy Nation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12.
Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9. Tass.
Thank you, Macca. Macca, last week we noticed that former Deputy Premier of Victoria and now Professor of the Monash Sustainability Institute was actually tweeting and challenging some front page story in The Age about backburning and fuel reduction. So we thought it might be useful to call John and have a conversation with
John
him.
John who?
John Thwaites. Good morning, John Thwaites.
Good morning.
So, John, we're very interested in understanding what motivated you to actually start tweeting about this very issue about backburning and fuel reduction.
It was really an article on the front page of The Age, which started off by claiming that somehow the federal government was going to shame the states into doing more fuel reduction burning. And it wasn't clear what the federal government was going to do, except this is a continuation of the false culture war where fuel reduction burning is being put forward by some as some sort of panacea to bushfire, and in many cases is being used as a way to reduce discussion about some of the more basic causes such as climate change.
So tell us a bit more about that, John, because, you know, what we've heard is that the Greens have been blamed for preventing the backburning from taking place. But what you're arguing is that, in fact, climate change is the real cause of the bushfires that we've just experienced here in Victoria and New South Wales.
Well, there's a few factors there. I mean, the cause of the bushfires is multiple, but in most cases it's been dry lightning strikes, dry thunderstorms that have set off fires in bushland, which is extremely dry. And the reason it's so dry is linked to climate change because we've got less rainfall and higher temperatures. So it's a combination of factors. What is not a cause of these bushfires, despite these claims, is a lack of fuel reduction burning. And unfortunately, this is being used, this fuel reduction burning argument is being used, I think, to divert attention from some of these real causes. Fuel reduction burning is important. It can be a tool that can be used, but in no way is it some sort of silver bullet for fighting fires.
So it's going to be a combination, John. It's Macca that, you know, that backburning and fuel reduction and, you know, that the, you know, local authorities and the state government and the federal government do have to work together on this. But this narrative that is being put out, you know, one that, oh, well, this isn't happening. You know, the backburning, you know, and the fuel reduction isn't happening because of the influence of green policies is crap. It's nonsense. It is happening. And it's being done on a methodical and a consistent basis, isn't it?
Well, that's right, Mac. I mean, and I was Minister for Environment and responsible for Victoria's park system and for the backburning during the 2000s when we had some major fires. And I never experienced any influence by Greens or Greenies to prevent or stop fuel reduction burning. That was not a factor. The limiting factor is the weather. And what we're seeing now is it's harder to do these back these fuel reduction burns because we're getting hotter and windier autumn periods, and that makes it dangerous to set off a fuel reduction burn. And I highlighted in my tweets what occurred in 2005 when I was minister, when a back burn at Wilson's Prom ended up escaping 10 days after it was lit and ended up burning down a good part of the prom and led to the evacuation of many people from Tidal River. And I think the fact that the fire got away 10 days after it was lit highlights the real risks, because you don't know, even on the day you light the fuel reduction burn, exactly what the weather's going to be in, you know, a week or so, and yet the embers can still be alight for that period. So you have to be very, very cautious. We've seen other back burns escape. Another one in Victoria at Lancefield escaped, and that ended up destroying, I think, six homes. That was in 2015. And I wasn't aware until I read an article this week interviewing Shane Fitzsimmons, who's the New South Wales Rural Fire Service Commissioner, who's been leading the fire fight up there. Tragically, his father died, who was a firefighter, as a result of a backburn that got out of control in New South Wales. So backburning is part of the firefight itself, and that's a different thing from fuel reduction burning, I should say. That is what you do during a fire, but this fuel reduction burning, where you're introducing fire into the landscape out of the fire season, is something that has to be done extremely cautiously.
Because, you know, if you think about the term fuel reduction, that it's actually, you know, it's reducing the amount of fuel that should there be a fire that is there to burn. And it just makes sense. It makes so much sense.
So, John, well, the bit that I'm really baffled about is why this debate is taking place. I mean, what you've described is eminently sensible, and you know, even a non-scientist like myself can understand that. But why are we having this debate? Why is it that our community is so polarised? You know, the other day I was listening to a commercial radio station, and it was all about fuel reduction and backburning as being the, you know, the only preventative strategy that could be put in place. Why are we having this debate, John?
Unfortunately, it's because we do have a culture war situation in this country around climate change, where those who either don't believe in climate change or seek to limit any action to a minimum tend to fight the fight, their fight, on the basis of a culture war, and argue that it's just inner city greenies who are concerned about this. You saw evidence of this from the leader of the National Party, the Deputy Prime Minister, recently saying, oh, it's all these inner city woke people who are concerned about climate change. I mean, this unfortunately is leading to an irrational argument. Instead of the whole community coming together to look for real solutions, both to climate change and to managing the increased risk of fire. What we know absolutely from the scientists is that climate change is increasing temperatures, it's leading to less rainfall in the southern part of Australia, and it's increasing the bushfire risk. Ross Garnaut, in his report more than a decade ago, predicted that we'd be in this situation in 2020, and that's where we're at, with more risk of greater intensity fires.
So, John, we're nearly out of time. I'd like to take the conversation to what should be the right policy settings. Could you give us a very high-level snapshot view of what we should be doing as a nation to try to prevent these sorts of bushfires from occurring in the future?
Well, unfortunately, we're not going to prevent bushfires, and we've always had fires. What we need to prevent is loss of life and then loss of property. That's got to be our target. And that's why all of our policies need to be directed to maximising human safety. That was the recommendation of the Victorian Rural Commission. And we're now, I think, seeing the benefits of that, because even in these terrible fires in Victoria over this summer, the loss of life has been kept, you know, relatively low. I mean, any loss of life is terrible, but it has been relatively low. And that's because there's a major focus on human safety, both in the firefighting effort and in people getting out of areas where there's a risk. Clearly, we also need to increase, I think, our air capacity and our capacity to get in early when there is these lightning strikes and try to restrict the area of fires. And we do that through both air tankers, but very much by having people on the ground, the fantastic firefighters we've got, the volunteers and the paid professional staff, reducing the area of fires and containing them as early as possible. And finally, I do think there is going to be a role for technology, more automatic sensing of fires and, you know, maybe even technological approaches to fighting these fires that are going to make it easier than it is today. But having said all of that, we're not going to eliminate fire from the landscape. What we're going to do is protect human life.
That's a very grim story, John.
Mm. Do you think, John, in terms of the resources, and I think everyone acknowledges that more ability for aircraft or more aircraft to fight this is important. In terms of boots on the ground, are there sufficient numbers with the size of the fires we've seen? Are there, in your opinion, sufficient numbers of volunteers and paid firefighters and equipment to deal with a crisis of this size, or do we need to actually put some more resources there?
There has been a big boost in resources over the years, and following the terrible fires of Black Saturday in Victoria, there was a big boost to firefighting capacity in Victoria. We're seeing the benefit of that. We need to keep reviewing that and to see whether we need to do more there and more resources. But I think we need to acknowledge that there has been that big boost, and in some areas we're seeing a big increase in capacity and skill as well. So that's all important. I do want to emphasise, though, that the underlying factor here is climate change, and we have temperatures across Australia 1.5 degrees higher than the average over the past year. Now, that doesn't sound a lot, but what the fire experts say is that with climate change, we're going to have a massive, and we already are seeing a massive increase in the fire danger rating.
Yeah.
And that means we're having more days of very high risk. And that's why another part of our effort has to be in tackling climate change. And you hear this story from the Prime Minister, well, it doesn't matter what Australia does. That's just complete bunkum. What Australia does makes a big difference. We are the highest emitters per head in the developed world. We not only emit a lot in Australia, we sell coal overseas, which then is burnt and leads to an increase in temperature in Australia and an increase in fire risk. All the coal that we send overseas ends up increasing global temperatures and affecting our climate here in Australia. So we do have to look at what we can do to tackle climate change. Otherwise, we're going to be in a much worse situation a decade and 15 years ahead.
Yeah.
John, thank you very much for your time. Unfortunately, we're out of time. It's been a great conversation, and it's great to get some clarity on what's in fact occurring. I'm actually a little bit disturbed to hear from you that bushfires are here to stay, and what we need to do is to focus on better managing them, better detecting them, and dealing with air quality and our response to those. Enjoy the rest of your day, John, and thank you very much for your time this morning.
Thanks, Tess. Thanks, Macca.
Cheers.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.